Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by the IRS, who is already aware of your dependencies. Episode 204, Own Your Dependencies with Mark Rickert.
Hey, John Major, Robin is out today. Do you think that we can do this ourselves?
I was planning on just leaving too. I think we could just cancel it maybe.
Cancel? Yeah, she carries us every week. And, you know, we're going to be exposed.
Definitely. I am going to have to talk more.
I think that might be a good thing. Have a little more of that, because clearly Robin's the one dominating the conversation when we're all together. Hi, Robin. I'm usually the one doing that. We're gonna give it a try. We're gonna see what we can do here. Luckily, we have some help. We have some reinforcements. So I'm Jamin Holmgren, of course, the regular host of React Native Radio, and with me is John Major Condon, who is my remarkable co-host.
Hello.
And I appreciate you joining me today and keeping me company. But we do have help. With us is Mark Rickert. He is going to be a guest host today. I'm really excited about this. Mark is a principal software engineer at Infinite Red. He lives in Asheville, North Carolina, at least for the moment, and is an extreme sports enthusiast. Is that even what you call it, Mark? Like, do people call themselves extreme sports enthusiasts in that community, or what is it called?
Yeah, I guess it just depends on whether you're a professional or not. I don't make money by jumping off of buildings and bridges or jumping out of planes. I just do it for fun. So I call myself an enthusiast, but there are people out there that get paid for it on the, you know, Red Bull teams and stuff like that, but not me. I'm just an enthusiast.
Well, okay. Yes, but this is a little aside, but you have released software in Freefall before.
Yes, I have. I have a skydiving app in the App Store that shows where all of the closest drop zones are to you. And I actually released the first version of that in free fall at about 12,000 feet. I taped my cell phone to my arm with a bunch of duct tape so it wouldn't go flying down to the earth, and waited till I got out of the plane and had cell phone signal. I was low enough to the ground to get cell phone signal, and I hit the button in the App Store Connect app.
Were you? Okay, so there's actually a video of this, and we're going to link to it in the show notes.
But, oh, I have not seen it.
Yeah, you're going to have to see this, John Major. But were you? So here's the thing that I'd be worried about. I'd be worried that I'd get too like, hey, this isn't working. Like, what's going on here? And start debugging it on my wrist and then just smack into the ground. Like, were you worried about that?
not really. A lot of people like to call people like me adrenaline junkies, but I don't really see it like that. Like, the adrenaline fades away after a little bit of time, and then you start focusing on what can I do to improve my skills. And once you've attuned your body and your mind to that level of adrenaline and risk, other tasks seem pretty mundane. I've had a friend who got a tattoo in free fall one time. So
wait, what?
Yeah, it wasn't a great one, but it was. She got tattooed, a battery powered tattoo machine.
Yeah, as free fall tattoos go, it may not have been the top quality. Wow. So as you can tell, he's into things like obviously skydiving, base jumping, parasailing, wingsuit base jumping. And also just safe things like, you know, skydiving and paragliding and, you know, all the quote unquote safe things that he does. Also, you were a digital nomad for how many years?
I think I lived in my van for 6 or 7 years, just traveling around the country. Yeah.
And you're a little more settled down now, but you still have sort of that digital nomad roots. That's almost an oxymoron there, but that's kind of where you enjoy being kind of untethered and moving around, which is pretty cool.
Definitely. When I found out that I could just live in a van and work on my computer for a while. I jumped at that opportunity. I sold everything I owned, and I was living as a digital nomad and working for Infinite Red. This isn't an Infinite Red commercial, but we are hiring senior level software developers.
I did not even prompt you to do that. Well done. Mark gets a raise.
Yes.
How long have we known each other, Mark? It's been a long time now.
We have. We started working together, I think, back in 2013.
You had a mohawk back then.
I did have a mohawk, yeah. I don't know what else to say about that.
Was it colorful?
When I search my memory, I seem to remember it was pink, but I don't think it was actually pink.
It was not pink. I have very dark hair, and it's very difficult to dye. I've tried.
Oh, okay. But I was working on some open source, and you kind of just showed up in there. I'm trying to remember how that went.
Well, yeah, I was basically starting working in this new sort of niche programming language. I'm not sure if we should say what it is since it's not React Native. We don't work in it anymore.
I don't have any problem talking about it. It is kind of, it was Ruby based. It was called Ruby Motion, and we built, we built iOS apps with it back in those days.
Yeah, for sure. And I was working on some iOS apps for my personal company. And Jamin Software Library did like 95% of what I wanted my app to do as far as a navigation structure. And so I was like, okay, this is going to get me 95% of the way. What can I do about this other 5%? And so I just started sending pull requests. I made it do what I wanted to do. And it seemed like people appreciated that. But the first time I actually contributed to one of Jamin's repositories, it was just a README update. It wasn't anything substantial. It was just a way to help others figure out how to contribute because I went through those painstaking steps.
Yeah, totally. And that's always a great way to get like started. If you're in the audience and you haven't done open source, if you just contribute a README update, that's always appreciated by authors. For one thing, it's really easy to review. You just look at it and yeah, that makes sense, and you merge it, you know.
Yeah,
there's release or anything.
I think my second pull request came 45 minutes later, and it was stripping out a bunch of white space. So it's like there are things you can do to contribute to help make a project better, even if it isn't writing some crazy code that does a million things. And so that was really my first introduction to Jamin. He surreptitiously merged all my pull requests, and we started a friendship from there. We started working on projects together, eventually started working together at Infinite Red, and we wound up together in a hotel room in San Francisco.
Well, do tell more.
Yeah, this is how all of Mark's stories end, is we ended up in a hotel room together in San Francisco.
No, we
this is
we
a true were, story, by the
we
way.
We were roommates. We were both small business owners and trying to cut costs because we were both speaking at the same conference. And so,
right.
We banded together even back then to help each other. So
yeah, that was fun. I remember it so fondly. It was like awesome hanging out. You were pretty busy, though. You had a lot of things going on. But we did get a chance to hang out at that conference. And that's also where I met Todd and Ken and Gant and you know, my future business partners, which was fantastic, as well as some of the other people at Infinite Red to this day. But we should get down to business. We've got a really cool topic in front of us and a lot of notes, and we want to get through that. So let's move into that. I'm really happy to have you here, Mark. Appreciate you jumping on with us.
Yeah, thanks.
Should mention, this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. We are a premier React Native design development agency located fully remote in the USA and Canada. You know us if you've listened to this. If you don't, go check us out, infinite.red/React Native. Don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio podcast because, you know, like Mark might get a little bonus if you do. I don't know. I came up with that.
In the notes section of where you heard of us, just say Mark.
And as Mark mentioned, we are hiring senior React Native engineers out of the US or Canada. So go to careers.infinite.red for that. All right, let's get into our topic for today. The title of the episode is Own Your Dependencies. We actually got this from Artsy, which is a company that actually previous guest Orda worked for back in the day. And he actually mentioned it in the episode that we talked about TypeScript with Orda. He works on the TypeScript team now. But he said that one of their kind of core mantras was own your dependencies. And I love that. It's so cool. It's such a great way to kind of think about things. Because I think, I know, you know, Mark and I have done a lot of open source. And there are people out there who are kind of entitled. They'll come into your open source and, you know, demand things and want things a certain way. And it's sort of like, hey, it's open source, you know, be like Mark and just go in and improve it, you know? And so own your dependencies. And no, we're not talking about, you know, the child tax credit in the US.
Own your dependencies.
John Major has a few kids. I've got four. John, you've got like three?
Three.
You got three. Okay.
And Mark, if you want some dependencies, I can ship them over to you.
Yeah, we've got a few extras.
I'm perfectly fine with me and my partner and my cat.
So we are talking about code dependencies, generally NPM modules, but there's also CocoaPods. There's Gradle dependencies. There's also stuff that you can copy and paste into your own code base that could be considered a dependency in some ways. There's SDKs, there's various libraries and whatnot that you sort of link in from Xcode and Android Studio from the native libraries that come with the platforms. But generally, you know, in the case of what we're talking about here, we're going to mostly focus on NPM modules. I think a lot of it will be generally applicable to other dependencies as well. So first off, I want to actually ask you, Mark and John Major, in the project you're currently working on, how many like direct dependencies do you have listed in your package.json, including like dev dependencies?
I went through and I looked at the current project I'm working on, which is a very large enterprise application. And it's a React Native iOS, Android, and web project. It has 124 dependencies defined in the package JSON file. 124.
That's 124 different libraries that, you know, that you're bringing in directly that someone else has written, generally speaking.
Correct. Yeah. And those are things that I've added in there or came with our template that we started with. But then there's a nice yarn command that you can run called yarn list. And then if you give it a depth, it'll actually go and tell you exactly how many dependencies are at each depth. And so when I look at the first depth, I have 1,754 dependencies. And so that means that each dependency has on average about 10 sub-dependencies. Wow. If we go another level deeper, I've got 2,600. And then at the final level, I've got 8,181 dependencies and sub-dependencies and sub-sub-dependencies from those 124 explicit entries.
And some people will be like, that's like rookie. Those are rookie numbers, you know, like we have, you know, in ours, we have whatever, you know, but that's pretty normal. John Major, did you check on your project?
Yeah, it's about 110 ish.
Yeah. And I feel like that's fairly normal for a mature React Native app to have around 100 ish, you know, dependencies, direct dependencies. And as Mark said, it gets bigger and bigger. Now, there are a lot of duplicates in that. If you look through the yarn list, you'll see that there are a lot of duplicates, but often they're different versions. So even if it's a duplicate, it's a different version. So dependencies are by far the vast majority of the code that is running in your project. The vast majority, like the code that you write, is a minority. And yet we don't really talk about this. I don't think we talk about it enough. So I'm really, yeah, this is going to be a good topic. So Mark, like when you're adding one of your 124 new dependencies to your project, how are you deciding that, hey, we need a new dependency and, you know, like this is actually something we need?
The biggest thing is to ask yourself that question is, do I need this? Do I need this code that someone else has written? Do I need to integrate this into my project? Does it provide significant value to me versus something else like copying and pasting one snippet of code that you need into your project? You have to really look at the overall ecosystem of a dependency to determine whether or not it's appropriate to add to your project. Now, the biggest thing I look for is widespread community support. That's a big deal for me. Like things that are out there that have thousands of stars that are well known in the React Native community, I have no problem adding those to my project if it does what I need it to do. Take for existence, like React Native Maps. Is there even another mapping library out there? It seems like that's what everyone uses. And so if everyone's using it, it's more likely to have solutions to issues you run across. It's more likely to have support in the GitHub issues or answers on Stack Overflow that you can go and reference for people who've had the same problem. So adoption rate is definitely one of the bigger factors in my mind for adopting a dependency into my project.
That's a great point.
So it seems also that size would be considered in this too, such as size of the code base, perhaps just thinking about if this code base is so big, it's probably doing all these different things that you are looking for it to do, versus if a code base is pretty small, that could be something that you could copy and paste into your project itself.
Yeah, exactly. I had an instance like this where I wanted to determine the distance between two latitude and longitude positions in my project. And the Haversine function is a solved problem. Like, we already know how to do it. And I found this dependency, React Haversine or React, I don't remember what it was called. And I looked at it and it was just one function. And so, I tweaked it. I made it a little better. And I just put it into my project as a function instead of bringing in another dependency, because you never know what's going to happen with those dependencies. There are people maintaining them and updating them. And who, I don't know if the person that made this, if I trust them or not, or if I trust that their GitHub account is secure and that a hacker is not going to social engineer them into putting malicious code into my project from this one tiny dependency that I didn't need.
Did you then take that and publish it yourself?
I did not. Because it's a known problem, you know? There are so many places where you can go and find a Haversine function in whatever language you want. I specifically wanted a TypeScript version of it. But a lot of the examples out there are just regular old JavaScript. And so I found a good one and I modified it to use for my project.
You mentioned security, and I think this is a big one. I've often looked at our ecosystem of open source, and being an open source contributor of some fairly good sized libraries.
Wait, aren't you a core contributor on React Native?
I am on React Native and MobX State Tree, primary maintainer there. Ignite, I've a lot of these libraries, too many really. React Native, WebView. It means I do all of them poorly, but I do a lot of open source, and I see the kind of behind the scenes conversations that happen. And some of the teams, like some of the core teams, there's a lot of conversation that's very thoughtful. It's very much like, we got to make sure that we're doing this right. And then others, it's like, the test pass, merge it, and ship it. And, that gives you a little bit of pause. It's like, okay, what exactly is in the library? And there have been situations where people have done what seem to be semi-innocuous pull requests to popular libraries that are often like dependencies of dependencies of dependencies. Like, they're way down in the chain. So you're not even going to be reviewing them. They're not on your radar. They're way down there. If you have 8,000 dependencies of dependencies of dependencies, you just can't keep track of all of that stuff. There have been situations where people have injected malicious code that deep into it. And it doesn't even, the PR doesn't even look bad. It just looks, kind of innocuous. Or they get control of the NPM space and they can publish there. And I know there's one situation where they published to NPM, but they didn't update the GitHub repo. So if you looked at the GitHub repo, the code looked fine, but the NPM source was different. And it was very who goes and checks that, that they match, right?
Nobody does, but I'm here to say you should.
Exactly. Well, there's a lot of you should here. And I don't know if there's a lot of people gonna actually do this.
But. Yeah, no, but there are tools out there that can help you with these security audits. One thing that I actually recently found out about is a command called yarn audit. Mm. And if you're using Yarn, I'm sure there's an NPM command that does something very similar. But the NPM website actually does security audits, and maintainers can tell you if there's a security vulnerability. And all you have to do is run yarn audit, and it'll come up with a list of all of the things that are wrong with all of your dependencies and sub-dependencies and sub-sub-dependencies. I ran it on my project and found a cross-site scripting vulnerability in a sub-sub-dependency, which I promptly updated. So yeah, there are tools out there that we can use to determine if we're vulnerable or not.
Yeah, and those are obviously great for, and it is NPM audit, but and those are obviously great for reported issues. But you're still always rolling the dice a little bit, you know, because there could be a very small, rarely used package that you have somewhere in your tree that just nobody's looking at, and the only person who would notice it is you if you were to go look for it.
Have any one of you been on a project where there is internal review of a package code before it's included into the project itself?
We've had clients who have had that process in place. Generally speaking, we're not as involved in that. We hand it off to the security team, and they approve it, and then we move on. There are some companies that do that.
Yeah, I was working on a project where they did a security audit of all the dependencies we were using for version one, and then promptly forgot to do it for everything after that. So they're basically were saying, we want to know what you're using, but when we ask for this new feature, use anything you need.
Well, yeah, there's that age old kind of conflict between security and convenience happening.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly.
Convenience pretty much wins.
Always.
So what happens when, so we know that there are risks to bringing in third-party libraries, but what happens also when it doesn't do exactly what you want? Like Mark, you said that my library promotion back in the day, it did 95% of what you needed. You sent in some pull requests and I happened to release those, but you know, like that doesn't always happen. Like you could send in a pull request and it just sits there for a long time. What do you do then?
Yeah, I would say in situations like that, when you're using a repository that isn't maintained by the owner, you're going into some dangerous territory, because that opens up the door for new people to come in possibly and maybe publish malicious code. Now, what I'm talking about here is probably the exception rather than the rule. And so if it's something that solves most of your problem and is not being maintained, you can always use tools like patch package,
yeah,
or even just fork the repository and use your own fork. I actually prefer patch package with an extensive note in the diff as to why I've changed it and when it should be removed, generally with a link to a GitHub issue or something like that. So developers that come after me know exactly why I changed this dependency to do something specific that maybe the repo owner maybe doesn't want to do or just doesn't respond.
And some places where you work at might not want you contributing to a project while you're working. I've been there. I have also contributed while I was working. But what I did also, from what you're talking about, Mark, at the time I took it and had it in a fork and was able to include it via the fork. I didn't know about patch package until recently. It's probably like, I don't know, a few months ago. Do you just want to like talk about what patch package is?
Yeah, patch package is a really great tool. You essentially add it to your dependencies. It is a dependency of your project. You can use NPX to run the most recent version. And essentially, it allows you to change your dependency files after you've downloaded it from NPM. And so essentially you'd run yarn to install all your dependencies. And if you notice something isn't quite working right with one, you can actually go into your node modules folder, edit that file, and then reload your application. And if you fix the change, all you have to do is run npx patch-package and then the repo name. And it will give you a diff that it then applies to that package every single time Yarn downloads the package in a post-install script, essentially, and it just patches it on your local project instead of relying on a fork or a different branch or muddying up the actual version number of the project you want to use in your package JSON. So it allows you to pin a dependency to a specific version and have your own changes built into it only in your local project.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this library is that it'll also warn you when you upgrade that package, and then you can go in and review your diff to see if it still makes sense or if they've like fixed that problem. So it does a good job of kind of staying on top of updates as well.
For sure it does. I had a situation where I upgraded one of the dependencies I had patched, and it told me, oh, we tried to apply this diff to this new version. It still worked, but you should double check and make sure that everything is done. We've already renamed it to work with your new version.
Right.
So it's a pretty powerful tool that I actually use all the time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What about updating dependencies? So dependencies fall out of date pretty fast. And there's a variety of tools. So one that I really love is yarn outdated. You just run yarn outdated and you get a list of all of the dependencies that are now out of date. And it'll also kind of differentiate between, you know, patch versions, minor versions, and major versions. So you can kind of decide, oh, let's just update all the minors or all the patches.
Yeah, it color codes them for you too.
It does, yeah. And it's a very cool tool. And you can kind of do this all yourself. There's another cool tool called Updater. UPDTR, and you can run that NPX updater, and it will run, or it will upgrade, basically it'll upgrade each of your dependencies that are outdated in order and run your tests. And if they pass, it'll go to the next one. If they fail, it'll roll that back and then go to the next one.
So you're saying I should write some tests?
Yes, you should write some tests, Mark. What's really cool about that is, let's say you're going to lunch, you just put that going, you come back, you get a report saying, hey, all of these ones, all these updates, you know, your tests passed, and all of these updates, they failed. So you know which ones you can just update, you know, fairly easily. And then the ones that failed, then you can look into why they failed and kind of like, you know, dig into it later. But Updater is a very cool package. Yarn outdated is cool. There's also things like Dependabot on GitHub, but I found that kind of annoying, to be honest.
Yeah, it generates a lot of emails.
It does. Have you, John Major, have you used Dependabot or any of those other tools?
Haven't used it personally, just seen it lurking.
You'll always see it lurking. Yeah.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
I actually have turned it off in most of the repos I'm on because, like, you know, once in a while running Updater or yarn outdated does the job for me. And I don't really care that some, you know, like patch version of some dev dependency, you know, like, oh, hey, types just updated on, you know, node something or other. I'm like, this is like a build tool, you know?
Yeah, it's really important to, when you're upgrading dependencies, to actually go and look at the change log and see what's actually changed. Maybe you don't even need to update it because it was just, you know, a fix for something you don't need, or just a small README update and they decided to release a new version.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of reasons that software maintainers release new versions, and sometimes you don't need to until there's something that you need, and it's less risky to leave the dependency alone than to upgrade it for a very minor reason.
Yes. Now I got a question for you as we kind of wrap up this segment. When should you not use a dependency and instead just write it yourself? Mark, I noticed that at the end of our notes, you have this graphic that I think you pasted in there that's like a flowchart of should add a dependency.
I actually just generated that in our Google Doc together, kind of making a flowchart of how I understand and make a decision.
Oh, wait, that's an actual drawing in our Google Doc.
Yeah, I made a drawing in the Google Doc and made a little flowchart for us to kind of talk about how we should decide if we're going to put a dependency in our project or not.
I like it. We're going to put a link to this. Maybe we could host it somewhere and put a link to it. But it starts with, does this dependency solve your exact problem? If not, is the code that solves your problem a small part of the library? If it's kind of like, no, then just write it yourself. Like, this is a trivial library. It doesn't solve it exactly anyway. Write it yourself. If yes, that it is a small part, then integrate the parts you need directly into your project. So just pull the, you know, like the small pieces into your project rather than having to, you know, pull in a giant library just to solve one problem.
Yeah, that could add, you know, kilobytes or megabytes to your compiled program at the end of it.
Exactly. If yes, this does solve your exact problem, then is there widespread community support? If so, go for it. Otherwise, if not, then maybe look for a different one or write it yourself. I kind of like this. It's a good kind of rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. Then, and we'll try to link to that in the show notes. All right, cool. Well, we're running low on time, so let's move into the next section of this one. We're actually going to do our weird bugs section because I think, Mark, you've got a weird bug. You've got a weird bug this time around.
I do. I'm happy to say that a lot of my weird bugs have already made it onto React Native Radio.
It's true. It's true. Like, I swear half the weird bugs we talk about come from Mark. Mark's really good about sharing, like, hey, this is weird. Check this out, you know, like in our Slack. And I love it because it's always fun, like shop talk. But you know what? Go for it. Like, you've got a weird bug that you've been tracking.
So I've been tracking this weird bug for quite a while now. It was originally reported on the React Native GitHub in October of 2018. Mm. Essentially, the bug is when you have hot reloading turned on the iOS simulator, and I'm not sure if this works in Android simulator because I do most of my development in iOS simulator and then just check it in Android. Mm-hmm. So most of the time I'm in the iOS simulator, if hot reloading is turned on, every once in a while, if you've been working on it for a while, for an hour or more, you might get two dev menus popping up when you go to reload the application, hit Command Control Z or whatever, you get two dev menus that appear. People have said that it only happens on device, but I get it in the simulator as well. The only way to really deal with this is to close Metro, close the simulator, and rebuild the app. And so I've seen this come up multiple times. It happens to me maybe once or twice a week, and I just have to reset everything. There's been multiple questions as to what's actually triggering this, and nobody seems to have an actual answer as to why this is happening. So we'll post the issue link in the show notes, and maybe you could go and read through and figure out if you can fix this weird bug.
That would be awesome. Yeah, that would be quite annoying, and apparently it's just been very difficult to get to the bottom of it. Okay, cool. Well, I think that's a wrap. So where can people find you, John Major, online?
Sure. I'm basically everywhere at John Major C.
And that's J-O-N Major
yep.
C?
J-O-N Major C.
You can find me at Jamin Holmgren. And Mark, what's your Twitter?
Well, I don't really do social media very much. I'm kind of actively trying to remove it from my life because I think a lot of it is toxic. But I do have an Instagram account where I post videos and photos of my crazy adrenaline-fueled sports. If you want to go check that out, it's at Mark Rickert.
You also have a YouTube channel, which we can link to as well.
Yep,
I do. And people need to go check out your... although I scanned through your YouTube channel, I didn't see the releasing an app video. I don't know. Was it on a different channel or...?
No, it's on the same channel. I'll have to make sure that it's there in public. I don't know.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, we'll make sure we get that linked in the show notes. You can also follow React Native Radio at React Native RDIO. Thanks to our guest host, Mark Rickert. Thanks so much for being on, Mark. It's been awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun.
As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Wirth, our transcript and release coordinator, Jed Bartoski, our social media coordinator, Missy Warren, and our designer, Justin Husky. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out, infinite.red/React Native. Special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure you subscribe, send this to a friend, and also we are hiring React Native engineers. If you're a senior level React Native engineer located in the US or Canada, go to careers.infinite.red. See y'all next time.
See you next time.